Blog Talk Radio.
I didn't think it was anything.
I had pain in my abdomen. It just wouldn't go away.
I was spotting, but I had already gone through menopause.
These symptoms may be nothing, but they could be early warning signs of a gynecologic cancer, such as cervical, ovarian, or uterine cancer.
Seeing my doctor probably saved my life.
Warning signs are not the same for everyone. If you think something's wrong, see your doctor. Ask about gynecologic cancer. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO for more information. A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Good morning, and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes, and I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keyes, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. And now I'm on Instagram. Yes, lots of cool pictures. You can win a prize. Tag me on Instagram. I just want to say thank you for all the listeners, all your support, past 1 million downloads of the podcast. Wow. I am so, like, amazed by that. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm glad that you have enjoyed the shows. I hope you've shared them with your friends and family. Again, I just wanted to say thank you for your support. Well, this morning I have two wonderful guests on because today and this month, all this month, is Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month. Now, you guys know I'm always trying to do shows to educate people and also myself about topics. I had never knew that there was even a Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month at all, so I was surprised when I found out a past coworker of mine had a brain aneurysm and reached out to me and was telling me about this month and the different events that were going on. And I said, wow, well, I need to have her on the show. So she's on the show. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Joy.
Thank you so much for coming on. Terry is a brain aneurysm survivor. She had one, and she's still here kicking. And also I have a doctor on the line, Dr. Juma Karas. I know I may have totally messed up the name, but she's from Thomas Jefferson University Hospital. I connected with her through the Brain Aneurysm Foundation. Thank you to the foundation. Good morning, Dr. T.
Good morning, Joy. Thank you for having me.
Thank you both again for giving up your Saturday morning to talk about this important issue. Again, I didn't even know there was a Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month. Terry, did you know that there was one before you had an aneurysm?
No, I did not.
It's crazy. And Dr. T, were you aware? Sorry, go ahead, Terry.
Yes, we're actually very involved with the Brain Aneurysm Foundation, and September, actually, not August, is our Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month. And like you mentioned,
September,
correct. We actually have a lot of great activities, and certainly the walk is one of them, and I believe, Mrs. Robinson, you'll be attending.
Yes, I will. And actually, we've had some wonderful, if I can just mention, not by name, but wonderful support here in Philadelphia of contributions. I mean, it was just an outpouring that I went to local businesses in my where I live, and they're supporting us with goods and what have you. So that's so wonderful, and I just, you know, wanted to mention that.
That's terrific,
that's
great. For a great cause.
Well, I just want to let the people know that many people, estimated 6 million people in the United States, have an unruptured brain aneurysm, or 1 in 50 people. So it could happen to you. I also found out recently that Bruno Mars, I believe his mother had a brain aneurysm, or she died of a brain aneurysm. So you may know someone who is affected by it, or someone in your neighborhood at least, definitely, if it's 1 in 50 people, someone in your neighborhood has been affected by a brain aneurysm. Let's start with Dr. T. What is a brain aneurysm?
Sure. So a brain aneurysm, just to describe it in layman's terms, you can think of it like a balloon on a blood vessel wall. So it's like a little blister on the blood vessel within the brain. That blister, unfortunately, can rupture. It can open and leak blood, and that's the devastating side effects of having a ruptured aneurysm, or what we call a subarachnoid hemorrhage.
Now, I was reading, Dr. T, that there aren't a lot of signs or symptoms, and that's the problem, that it doesn't cause signs and symptoms until it's almost too late. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct, and that's why, unfortunately, aneurysm rupture is such a devastating event. sometimes, unfortunately, not frequently, the patient may have what we call a sentinel headache or a warning headache. And typically this headache is described as acute onset, and it's the worst headache of one's life. It may or not be associated with nausea, vomiting, and sensitivity to the lights, which unfortunately, for those of you that are migraineurs out there, that is a very common presentation of a typical migraine, which is why oftentimes these warning headaches, unfortunately, may not be really taken seriously because we don't really know it's a warning. But for the majority of time, unfortunately, the patients don't have any symptoms until they rupture. And following the rupture, unfortunately, there's devastating side effects. As you may have heard, about close to 50% of patients don't survive the original rupture, and the ones that do survive have devastating side effects, and about 60 to 70% of them may have a severe deficit after the rupture if they survive it.
I was reading that some of the symptoms that people, again, sound similar to other health issues, a droopy eyelid, possible double vision, pain behind the eye, dilated pupil, numbness or weakness on one side of the face. Now, these to me almost sound like signs of, you know, you're about to have a stroke, or maybe I'm just tired, or like you said, in terms of the bad headache, oh, I'm having a migraine. So you may ignore these things. Terry, can you talk to the audience about what symptom you had right before you probably had the aneurysm?
Yes. I had, as a compliance specialist with an healthcare organization, we were doing a lot of different programs, projects, I'm sorry. And I also was enrolled in my master's program of human services. So I had a lot of different things going on, had just bought a house and just a lot of things going on at one time. And it wasn't unusual for me to have a headache. I mean, tension gives you a headache. But that day was unbelievable. I had a headache that, still yet, I can't describe it. It was just indescribable. My son found me on the floor between the kitchen and the dining room, and luckily he happened to come down and find me there. So that's how initially, you know, it happened to me. I didn't have any, as the doctor said, you know, you don't get a pre-warning, for lack of a better word. And I describe a tension headache. I mean, I'm kind of used to them, you know, going to school, working, raising children, different things you do, you have it. I mean, but I never would have thought in a million years. And my, unfortunately, was a hemorrhage.
Wow. So now, Dr. T, she said hers was a hemorrhage. Can you explain that to the audience as opposed to maybe some other type of brain aneurysm, or can people catch the brain aneurysm before it happens?
Sure. And typically, that's exactly as Mrs. Robinson said. When the patient develops acute onset of the worst headache of one's life, it's typically a sign that the aneurysm has actually bled. It has ruptured. Sometimes patients can have symptoms similar to what you mentioned, a droopy eyelid, the pupil, the black circle within the center of the eye is dilated, it's enlarged. And that's because of the location of the aneurysm. So certain location of the aneurysms, if it's nearby a nerve that does a specific function for the face or the head, then that nerve can get irritated or inflamed. Now that can occur either because the aneurysm is about to rupture, or it can occur if the aneurysm grows in size. So a patient can have symptoms prior to rupture, and certainly that's the best way of detecting an aneurysm because you can treat it emergently and prevent a rupture. So these kind of patients, we basically treat them almost as if they are ruptured. They are absolute emergencies, and you know, we would not wait a few days or weeks to treat them. We would treat them immediately as if they're about to rupture. So that's the difference. Typically, the severe headache comes from the aneurysm that has bled. Any other symptoms may or not be associated with a bleed, but it could be a warning that the aneurysm is just about to rupture or it's growing, which is also another concerning symptom.
Now, Terry, your son, thank God, found you in enough time. You got to the hospital.
At
what point did you wake up and say, what happened? Or where were you?
Well,
or what am I doing here?
Well, for me, I can't really tell you what point it was, because I think when I started to realize something was really wrong with me is when I was in rehab at Bryn Mawr. I don't think that I started to connect. I had to learn to walk and talk again. I was in ICU for back and forth for some time, as my family said to me. So I think later in my rehab, when you asked the question, when did I know, I think later in my rehab, I started to say something went wrong. I wasn't sure what it was, and I'm sure my family and friends talked to me about it, but I still couldn't comprehend it. So I'm sure the doctor can talk to you about, you know, the cognitive. I mean, you're just not there.
And that's exactly right, Ms. Robinson. It's not uncommon what you described at all. I have had multiple patients that come into the office, and these are patients that I see every morning. Oftentimes, they have a prolonged ICU stay, and by prolonged, I mean 21 days or longer. Mm-hmm. And they will meet me for the first time in the office, and the families are just shocked because they have seen me there every day. I have talked to the patient every day. So the neurocognitive side effects are really as profound as the neurological side effects. In other words, a patient can be walking, talking, and be fortunate enough not to have a devastating side effect. But then if you sit down and talk to the family, they will tell you a lot of neurocognitive deficits. For example, memory is such a high eloquent function that unfortunately takes a hit almost immediately. So short or long-term memory can have an effect. Typically, it's a short-term memory. Other functions like computational skills, we have patients that are accountants or hold very complex jobs, and really they're unable to return to work fully and function like they used to. Personality changes, especially with aneurysms that are located toward the front of the brain, the frontal lobe. Certainly they can have atypical aggression. They can be temperamental, and families will notice the change, and it's very important for the physician to communicate that with the family and for the families to realize that, unfortunately, these are some of the side effects of having a ruptured aneurysm. Some patients get really sad and may suffer from depression, especially when they realize what kind of life-altering event they have just experienced. And again, very common signs and symptoms, and some of them can be treated. We have wonderful support groups here at Jefferson, and I'm sure...
Dr. T, let me just bring Terry in on the conversation about some of the things you were just discussing.
Sure.
Terry, do you know how long your rehab was? And also you mentioned you had to go back, well, you mentioned to me in your email that you had to go back into surgery. Do you know how long your rehab was, or are you still in rehab?
Well, I would say that I'm still in rehab because I had home care as well once I left. But I just kind of want to, if I could, say that when I went back to, I tried to go back to work. I'm a natural fighter, so I said, okay, I'll go back part-time. And my speech became very slurred, and my walking was off. I have my right eye drooped from the surgery, but it was almost shut. And I went back to my doctors, and they said, you're bleeding again. Let's get back in there. So if you ask that, I'm sorry, I don't remember. I forgot what
That's
you asked
okay.
me.
That's okay. Dr. T, this is a typical experience of someone who's had a brain aneurysm, just like you mentioned, the issue of memory.
Absolutely.
Dr. T?
And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes, like Ms. Robinson mentioned, the aneurysms may grow again, especially aneurysms that are really large. They can grow in a rather quick fashion and present with symptoms again, and they need to be very quickly detected and treated immediately to prevent another rupture.
Is this a genetic issue? Is this environmental? Is this an ethnic? how does someone get a brain aneurysm? Where do they come from? Why do they come from something you're eating?
Joy, you just hit the $1 million question. If only we had the answer to that. So, and if Christine Buckley's listening, this is something that really a lot of the brain aneurysm research is focusing on from her foundation. But it's basically a combination of factors like anything else. Unfortunately, we haven't yet found a genetic predisposition for aneurysms, although there's certain studies that are pointing to certain genes. But really nothing definitive that we can screen, because certainly everybody's interested in genetic screening. But the most plausible theory is that you're born with a brain aneurysm. Unfortunately, we don't have a screening MRI in every newborn. That would be every vascular neurosurgeon's dream. Mm-hmm. But most likely you're born with a brain aneurysm, and it either stays the same throughout your lifespan and doesn't rupture, or sometimes it ruptures, and some of the risk factors for rupture are smoking, particularly in women. Smoking can have an additive risk factor of 3. So if two identical twins have the same aneurysm, then a smoker will have 3 times the likelihood of the aneurysm growing and leading to a catastrophic rupture. Unfortunately, being a female has a 3-to-1 ratio for aneurysms to rupture. So we have an additional risk factor.
Should somebody get their kids? Dr. T, should Perry, did anybody talk to you about maybe getting your children or your sister or anybody screened because you had a brain aneurysm, Perry? Did anybody talk to you about something like that?
Well, I think one of the doctors asked me whether anyone else in my family, and my mother's sister had a brain aneurysm. And actually, it's so funny. I mean, not funny in the way that laughs, but she actually had the same exact thing that I had. She had ruptured, and then she tried to get on with living, and then she had to go back in again because of the bleed, and she's on the right side, too. Hypertension runs in our family extremely on both sides, my father and my mother. So I was diagnosed with hypertension at the age of probably 16 or 17.
Wow. So, yeah. Dr. T, does that also affect the potential for the brain aneurysm to occur?
Ms. Robinson hit it right on. That was another major risk factor I was going to mention. So hypertension, and it's very important to really incorporate the primary care physicians for post-rupture treatment. High blood pressure and smoking cessation are so important to prevent the subsequent aneurysm formation or growth of the existing aneurysm. In terms of family screening, typically a familial aneurysm syndrome, like we call it, it's 2 first-degree relatives with a cerebral aneurysm, and then absolutely first-degree relatives of the patient need to be screened. The screening is very easy. It's an MRA, so it's a magnet study. There's no radiation or anything toxic associated with it. It's a 15-minute study, and if a patient has an aneurysm, then, like I mentioned earlier, it can be treated to prevent a catastrophic rupture. So, Ms. Robinson, I hope you had your first-degree relatives, which means all your siblings and your children, fully screened, because it sounds like you may be having that familial aneurysm syndrome.
Yes. I only have 2 children, and my son and my daughter. Actually, my daughter is a special ed teacher, so she actually did a lot of research when I became ill, and I think she's still working on the fact that she's going to get screened, and my
son. That's great.
That's very important.
I mean, it can be emotionally. Yeah, I mean, I can imagine, like, your mom, you see your mom go through it, and then you're thinking, I could potentially, it's emotionally, something like this can be very nerve-wracking. I want to mention again that the Brain Aneurysm Foundation brought Dr. T and I to connect today. I really appreciate Christine Buckley. She's the executive director there. I want to mention their website, basound.org. Again, basound.org. They're also on Twitter. Their Twitter handle is Brain Aneurysms, so you can follow them there. They're actually trying to rally Congress right now to put brain aneurysm awareness on the map and declare it a national month. So you can go to their website and click on the link and connect with your representatives in your area to encourage them to do that. Also on their website, they have a lot of events. Terry, you want to tell us about the event that's happening in Philadelphia?
Yes, if I may. We're having the first, and I believe it's our first brain aneurysm walk. The brain aneurysm awareness walk. It's a 4-mile run and a 1-mile walk, actually taking place in FDR Park Sunday, September the 14th. Registration begins at 8 o'clock, but if you should happen to want to register before you you come and participate, feel free to go on the BAFound.org, and you can register there.
That's great. Yeah, again, BAFound.org is the website, and they have a link. It says, you know, looking for local events. And their phone number, if you want to give them a call, is 1-888-272-4602. Again, 1-888-272-4602. Also, you can email them, office@bafound.org, to inquire about any, you know, you need information. They have support groups. They have educational information for medical professionals. And also they have grant awards for research for medical professionals. So they're not just helping patients and patients' families, but they're also helping the medical profession. Do you think, and I hate to say this, and knock on wood, is it a chance that Terry would have another aneurysm? Is she going to have to look for the rest of her life or something like this? Or is now that she's had the second surgery, it's fine, and she, you know, or is it just an individual basis?
Sure. Terry, if you don't mind me asking, how was your aneurysm treated? Did you have the – I know you originally had the open surgery. Did you also have surgery where they packed the aneurysm from the inside of the vessel through the groin with coils?
Yes.
The
first one was coiled.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one was, they shaved my hair off.
The clip,
know.
The open surgery.
Yes, the open surgery.
Yeah, so that's a very good question, Joy, and a tough one. But she basically will have a follow-up with neurosurgery for the rest of her life. Certainly in the acute phase, the first few years, it's a very close follow-up. Here, Thomas Jefferson will follow our patients every 6 months with screening, especially patients that underwent the coil procedure, get a screening MRA and an angiogram. That's similar to the cardiac catheterization where we enter the groin with a catheter to look at the brain to assure that the aneurysm is still secure and it hasn't grown. Even the patients that have undergone a clip, the open surgery, which certainly is a little more definitive, although more invasive, they still undergo an MRA and an angiogram at 5 years' time. Now, this is for the existing aneurysm, and if that looks okay, typically you still want to see and get some sort of screening study every few years and see your neurosurgeon. In terms of her developing or any patient a new aneurysm, we call that de novo aneurysm formation. Typically, by the age of 50s to 60s, the patient should have all the aneurysms formed by then. But we do see it rarely, but we do see new aneurysms forming. And these aneurysms are actually also not to be taken very lightly because, as you can imagine, they are new, unstable structures in the making.
Yeah.
So very important to very close follow-up aneurysms very frequently, initially after a bleed, and then less frequently, but still continue to follow up really lifelong.
Mm. Wow. Well, this is amazing that you guys are sharing all this great information. I think the key, again, is the screenings. And as you mentioned, I guess neuroscientists or neurosurgeons would love to have the screening at birth for everyone, because that's something I did not know either, that you're born with them. So it would be very helpful. I think that we might want to talk to our representative to institute that in the medical field, because it would save so many lives. Now, if, for example, we only have a minute or two left, Dr. T, if they did find a baby that had a brain aneurysm, what could you possibly do? Is there a medication that a person could take? Is there food that they could eat? Is there a certain place they could live? What should be done if you did find an aneurysm at birth?
Sure. Really, the main thing is size when it comes to following an aneurysm. We don't treat every single aneurysm, so there's certain sizes above which we really get alarmed. So if it's a very small aneurysm that appears to be benign, in other words, it doesn't have any sister aneurysms and sister balloons that are really concerning, we can follow it, and certainly as the patient grows, monitor for blood pressure and certainly no smoking, any risk factors that could be eliminated, and very close follow-up. These aneurysms should get follow-up with MRAs every year, and the patient should really be educated to be very alarmed for that severe headache that I mentioned to you, that warning headache. Mm-hmm. If it's a large enough aneurysm by size, even babies actually do undergo treatment for these aneurysms, especially if they have ruptured. So that would be great. Early detection, like any other condition in medicine, is key.
Now, Terry, again, you're going to be out there next week. Could you just let people know again where they should go for more information about the walk?
Yes, certainly. You can actually by the website is BA as in boy, found, .org. Well, feel free. You know, sometimes people don't want to go on a website. They can feel free to call 1-888-272-4602. And I really hope that you will join us in helping us put this awareness information on using Philadelphia as one of the places that we're trying to make awareness. And join us at FDR Park on Sunday, September the 14th. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Terry. Thank you so much, Dr. T, for coming on this morning. And
thank you for
continuing to bring awareness because, again, I did not know about this particular issue and that it could be found at birth. I'm not aware that there were no warning signs other than maybe the headache and that some of the symptoms or warning signs are similar to other, you know, health issues. So all this information is very helpful, I think, for everyone. If you're out there and any of these things are triggering memories to you, maybe family members you might have mentioned, they might have mentioned to you, or you might have had some of these symptoms, go directly, call your doctor and talk to them. Hey, I did have this the other day, or, you know, I noticed this numbness and I ignored it. Don't ignore these symptoms that are happening to you. You could save your life. Again, thank you, Dr. T. Thank you, Terry, for coming on today.
Oh,
thank you so
welcome.
Much for having us.
Yes.
Oh, you're
welcome.
Good luck,
Ms. Robinson. Hello? Yes, Terry. Yeah, we just wanted to say good luck to you for your health.
Okay, and thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And I think Thomas Jefferson, if I can say real quickly, is one of the most outstanding hospitals here in Philadelphia for the support, research, and everything. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Robinson.
Wow.
I did want to stress the importance of research, so any contribution would be great, leading toward early detection and prevention for brain aneurysms.
I'm going to post, Terry, I have your link about you were raising money for the walk. I'll tweet that for people if they want to donate, and also I'll put it on Facebook. Again, I encourage people to study about this matter. Because it could save your life. Again, thank you so much, Dr. T. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
Okay.
You
too. Bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Again, you can follow me at Joy Keys on Twitter. You can become a fan on Facebook. Also, I want to encourage you to check me out on Instagram. I'm Saturdays with Joy Keys on Instagram. And you never know. I give away lots of prizes, gift cards, tickets to the movies, dinners. So I encourage you to follow, become a fan, or tag me on Instagram. Again, I want to mention to you that you can check out basound.org to learn more about brain aneurysms. I want to say thank you to Christine Buckley. She's the executive director there for supporting the important matter and also connecting me with Dr. T. And I want to encourage you to support Terry in her walk. I'm going to put out the link where you can donate money to help her with the walk. You guys have a wonderful Saturday. Thank you for tuning in.
I didn't think it was anything.
I had pain in my abdomen. It just wouldn't go away.
I was spotting, but I had already gone through menopause.
These symptoms may be nothing, but they could be early warning signs of a gynecologic cancer, such as cervical, ovarian, or uterine cancer.
Seeing my doctor probably saved my life.
Warning signs are not the same for everyone. If you think something's wrong, see your doctor. Ask about gynecologic cancer. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO for more information. A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.